Hi everyone, this is Glenn Keane, and you are listening to the Animation Addict podcast with the Rotoscopers. They are awesome.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 168, Pocahontas. It's the magical leaves.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'm your host, Morgan Stradley, joined by my amazing, beautiful co-host, Chelsea Robson. Say hello.
Hello. I have a very, like, Janis Joplin type sound going right now because I'm getting over being sick, but hey, it sounds very seductress, right?
Just yes. Tell me that. the listeners will never be able to say again that we sound the same because you are about an octave lower than I am. So there we go.
That's why I did it, just for the podcast.
So for those of you who are new to our show, the Animation Addicts podcast is a podcast all about the wide world of animation. And when I say all about, I mean mostly movies. We review a film past or present, and we are going back in time to 1995 to talk about Pocahontas, which is really exciting. It's been one of the most requested movies that we review. We just haven't really gotten around to it. There's so many great, amazing movies that, you know, today is the day. So I hope everyone is excited because I absolutely love this movie. And before we do, I want to give a quick patron shout out to Katie P, who's one of the newest patrons who joined us in the month of March. So welcome, Katie. And with that, let's jump right into it.
All right.
Never dreamed that something might be coming just around the river bend. Just around the river bend. I look once more just around the river bend beyond the shore.
So most of today's information is going to be coming from Box Office Mojo, IMDb, Wikipedia, and the interwebs. The studio was Walt Disney Feature Animation. It was the 33rd Disney animated feature film, and it was directed by Mike Gabriel and Eric Goldberg. Was this the first time that Eric took the helm of?
Yes, it was. First and last.
First and last.
Yeah.
Well, it was released in June 23rd of 1995, but actually, it was timed with Pocahontas' 400th birthday. A couple of weeks prior, they had playing on only six selected theaters on June 16th. So they're like, we still think June 23rd is the better week, so we're going to stick with that, but we still want to be able to take advantage of the fact that we are timing this with Pocahontas' 400th birthday.
Oh, of course.
So
that marketing synergy, just so you can say that you did it. It's nice.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
The budget was $55 million, and box office revenue brought in $346.1 million.
Which is not too shabby. I must say, you know, this film is kind of considered to be not as successful as the previous ones. I mean, it was the beginning of the Renaissance in the early 90s. So you had Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, hit. And then there was Pocahontas, which was still quite good at $346.1 million. But it just wasn't quite the caliber and the level of those other ones as far as the quality of the film and how people resonated with it and then how much it made. Which, I mean, personally, today, even $346 million is still, I think, pretty darn
yeah,
good.
Yeah, especially, I mean, especially when your budget is only $55 million. It's like, we made some change. That's good.
Yeah, right?
We made our budget back six times, so hey. See, okay, let's just go into our first recollections of this film. We were born you know, smack dab right before the Renaissance hit. And so we like experienced the Renaissance firsthand. I had only known hits in my lifetime. So it was just boom, 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 one after the other. And so when I went into Pocahontas, like I wanted to love this film. And that's the thing. Like I really wanted to just be all about the music, be all about the characters, be all about everything. And I think because of that, like I was like, yeah, I liked it. Didn't I? Why didn't I like this as much? I mean, I was like 10 years old ish. And so I was just like, man, what in the world was the difference? And that's kind of where I stood with this. I was like, I did not like Pocahontas as much as, say, Lion King. And that's basically everybody was like, it wasn't as good as Lion King.
And that's that. Yeah, so for me, I likewise, you know, this was, Disney was having hit after hit after hit, and you expected greatness. You know, this was the time period where they would release a clip of the film as part of its trailer nearly a year in advance. So as you're seeing the previous one, so I remember when I saw Lion King, the trailer for this was just Colors of the Wind. They just played Colors of the Wind as the trailer for Pocahontas, and there were some scenes that weren't necessarily done, and I thought that was super cool because you got to see, you know, some rough sketches and whatnot. And then, of course, you know, they're trying to get you in with the music, and it's amazing and beautiful. And so how could you not have been pumped for Pocahontas?
Right.
So me, I remember going in and just wanting and loving everything about this movie. And for the most part, I still really liked it just as much as the others. I mean, I had the Pocahontas dolls. I had Pocahontas, Nakoma, Cocoum, and John Smith. And
classy.
Yes. I also, you know, had the cassette tape to listen to. Before the film came out, or after, there was some sort of magazine, and I remember my cousin had it, and it had, like, behind the scenes. And I remember reading that and seeing this concept art, and this was kind of like the first time I'd ever really been introduced to concept art and unused concept art. I remember reading that, you know, Pocahontas was originally supposed to have a turkey as her sidekick to make it a little bit more realistic, but ultimately got cut. So those are kind of my key memories of Pocahontas. That being said, I wasn't like you where I was like, I wanted to like it, but I didn't. I mean, I really still loved Pocahontas after I saw it.
Okay. Well, there you go. The history behind this film is interesting because, you know, after Beauty and the Beast, it was huge. It was unprecedented. It was nominated for Academy Award Best Picture. And so they're just like, you know what? We really, really want to do that again. Obviously, who wouldn't want to be, you know, to follow that, whatever formula that they had, and to be able to be nominated again. And so Jeffrey Katzenberg, he was like, you know what? Aladdin and The Lion King are too far into it to really get the formula down. So this, whatever we do next, that's what we're going to do. And Pocahontas was the next one. And it's like, yes, this looks like a really promising candidate. And so they basically said, she's 10 years old. Let's make her older. John Smith, he's old. Let's make him younger and kind of a hunk, you know? And yeah, let's be more realistic and just be more, just very different from what we've already done. But you know, while at the same time, we're going to be exactly the same as what we've already done. And so we're going to make the animals mute, you know, to be more realistic. And at that point, they had already gotten Eric Goldberg on, but he had expected it to be like in Aladdin, where because he was in charge of the genie. And so he was like, oh, you're going to be pulling on my strengths again and, you know, doing more a cartoonish type show. But then they're like, no, not at all. And so he was like, okay, I don't really know about that, but whatever. So at that point in time, like there was actually, you know, ongoing riots in Los Angeles. Basically due to racism, things like that. And so he thought, you know what, I'm going to do something that will hopefully make a difference in what is going on around us, you know? And so it's like, hey, so that's what they're like, yeah, let's make Pocahontas that, you know, to be the difference maker, I guess. But the thing is, like, he, I think, bit off a little bit more than he wanted to chew, because there was just so much, because they really wanted to make this something quote unquote special. They were doing all that they can to, and throwing it through every different, you know, executive branch that they could. And, you know, there were so many executives in there that, like, I even saw that Goldberg was like, I'd rather, like, keep my sanity and work under Chuck Jones Productions for a while until you guys figure stuff out. And so even, like, he was working under a pseudonym during that time because he was just, like, couldn't take it. I was like, oh, man. Sorry.
Yeah, this Eisner era, this is kind of where it's starting to peak, or we're hearing more about it. You can read all about it in Disney War, which is a fantastic book about,
really was,
you know, this Eisner era. But yeah, those darn executives, they just need to keep their thumbs out of our pies.
But they really wanted to make this something special, and they did. It was the largest premiere in history. And so on June 10th, 1995, they did it in Central Park, followed with a live performance from Vanessa Williams. You know, you had 100,000 people there. It's crazy. Like, crazy numbers.
This is just going to show how Disney just was riding this wave. And every single film during this early Renaissance era was just expected to top the previous. Yeah. They were so high on themselves that, of course, we're going to do 100,000 people in Central Park to host the premiere of our film. And, of course, it's going to be a success. And, of course, you're going to love it.
Yeah. So, you know, there you go. So when we actually get into watching it this time, it was really funny. I did not even remember the whole, you know, John Smith saves Thomas during the storm part.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of even picked, like, for me, the movie doesn't start until you actually get to the New World and you see Pocahontas.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. I didn't even realize that was still there. I was like, oh, wait. Do I remember this part or not? I don't remember.
Yeah, it is interesting because the movie is called Pocahontas, but we start with John Smith and how, you know, he and his crew start making their way toward Pocahontas. And it's actually quite a lengthy scene. It's the Virginia Company song. It's 1507, do, 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 do. You know, and I just hearing that, I love the music in this. I think it's all quite good. But yeah, we spend a lot of time introducing those characters, setting up who our secondary characters are. You know, there's John Smith and Radcliffe, who I think are the main ones. But then, you know, the secondary characters of Thomas, who's going to play a role later on. So we have to kind of put him in key places. And yeah, so we set up that narrative and then we move over to the New World, as it's called.
I just want to say first off that I'm really glad that the boats that I am used to riding are called cruise ships, because I realize I'm like, I would die so quickly in this time period. There is no way I would make it. I'm like, there's so much, like, chaos. The water is scary. Like,
oh, right. Right. And with today, we have so much more technology and advanced warning when storms are coming, where we can kind of avoid things like that. But with this, I mean, obviously they would pay attention to weather patterns the best they could, but it's just off you go and good luck. You better not hit a storm that's going to capsize your ship or you lose half your crew. So luckily there were no fatalities, because that would be too sad. I mean, if they wanted to make it serious and mature, it's like, let's lose half our crew from the beginning.
Let's just kill somebody off right at the beginning.
Yes.
That'll teach them. So we get into the part where you start meeting Pocahontas, and she's up on that tall cliff as she's been.
She's a dreamer, an adventurer.
Yeah, she's the dreamer, the adventurer. And the whole fact that she dives like 200 feet is nothing.
No big deal. She's also a world-class Olympic platform diver.
Right.
Pre-Olympics, she was representing USA way before USA was even a thing. Yeah, we need her on our team, thank you.
Seriously.
I know. And that's the thing, is they're trying to make this movie very serious and mature and realistic, but then they have these cartoonish or kind of out there elements that I could see how it would draw people away. Like, I really feel that, okay, just because you're making the side characters mute, the side characters are just as bad, I guess. I mean, these are pretty tame, but at the same time, they do some really kooky things. Like in this very first scene with Flit and Miko, where, you know, Flit sees the target of Miko's tail, and he's really mad at him, and so he zooms toward him and tries to hit him in the butt. And, you know, just things like that, that, of course, you got to do it for the kids. You got to have something there. You can't make it too serious, because they're going to fall asleep or get bored or, you know, throw popcorn everywhere. But, so, you know, you have these sidekick antics, definitely from the beginning, which aren't too bad, I must say. Like, I don't feel like it's too distracting, except for later on when Percy becomes, like, this tree monster. It's Percy and Miko.
right.
It's just, it's borderline silly. Like, well, what am I talking about? Then there's, like, then we have Percy, who's in this tub eating cherries. It is a little bit silly.
Well, and I think that's the thing. They didn't choose a direction. And it's kind of like how Disney just kind of does this. Like, they did it with Hunchback as well. You know, where Hunchback, it's this super serious.
Even more source. So. Yeah.
Yeah, like source. But even then I was like, I think I liked Hunchback better than I did Pocahontas. Even though, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the gargoyles and all, but in general, I felt like everything else was pretty believable and like in its place.
Yeah.
This one, I don't think that they were, the story itself wasn't compelling enough for me, I think.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Like, the stakes didn't seem high enough at the beginning.
Right. Well, and it's this story that's based on reality to an extent, you know, but it's completely changed and morphed and Disneyfied, you know.
Right.
And that's kind of a hard place that they're in, because this is a historical character. And so just because someone existed in real life does not mean that you have to portray their story accurately. We see this all the time with different shows. You know, for example, you know, one that I've been watching recently is called The Crown. It's about Queen Elizabeth. And yes, elements are true and like key scenes are true, but then it's up to the filmmaker's discretion to, hey, well, this happened behind closed doors. Well, I get to make up the dialogue and the narrative. Right. And that's totally different, because they didn't just, I mean, totally change things around like they do with Pocahontas, like age her up, age him down, make a romance, this and that, you know.
Right.
And, but there was definitely, and there is, a subset of people that are just very upset that it wasn't, I guess, more true to the character. And when I say character, I mean the actual person. But, you know, with any piece of work or of art, and especially this one, I understand that, yes, Pocahontas was a real person. I can study and learn about her and be very well informed about her and learn a ton, you know. But this movie is a movie about some ideas of this time and this character. And I need to take that for face value and go from there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like today, speaking specifically of today's movies, you look at The Greatest Showman, which came out four months ago at the time of this recording. And it's, you know, been huge as far as like fans have just loved it. But then there were all these types of things on the internet saying like, oh, it was completely untrue, the portrayal of P.T. Barnum, and he was such a rascal and a scallywag. I heard there's a lot of, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, like, audiences didn't really care.
Here's the thing. It was the good foundation of a story, and maybe the actual story wasn't that great, so we spiffed it up a little bit.
Right.
You know, as long as you don't call it true to narrative.
Right.
See, this is...
It's not a docu-pick.
No, exactly. Then go for it, you know? It made a lot of people happy. A lot of people love that soundtrack.
A lot of people do, including myself. Speaking of soundtracks, let's go back to Pocahontas.
Ooh, yes. Our favorites, Mr. Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz.
Oh, my goodness.
Good guys.
I love this duo. This duo just, they just have made so many amazing things. the very first song that we really hear from Pocahontas is the song Just Around the River Bend. And you have her, first off, her dad comes, like, she comes home and her dad's like, hey, guess what? You know, Cocoam has asked for your hand in marriage. Like, oh.
And he's so serious. I love that scene where they look at him and he's just standing with his hands on his hips and the children are just kind of jumping up around him. And he's like, I'm going to ignore that this is happening. Oh, go away, man. Children.
And he's just like, oh, but you should definitely choose the smoothest course. That's what makes rivers last so long. And I'm thinking, that seems like a very lazy choice. Like, basically the opposite of what you really should be telling kids. Like, take the easy way out, kids. That way you'll get out of...
that's not what he means.
That's what it sounded like.
He was saying, well, so I can see your perspective, for sure. You know, because trails are not blazed by, you know, staying on the existing trails.
Any dead fish can float downstream.
You need to go and create new trails, definitely. But at the same time, there's a lot of things in life where the trail that's already been set is the best and the safest. And there's really no reason for you to go out and try to make your own way and explore your own path because others have tried and failed. And, you know, there's reasons why that don't work. And an easy analogy is like drugs. You know,
right.
You could go down the path of not using drugs, and that's the safest path, and that's a good path. Or you could try experimenting with drugs and see where that takes you. Probably not a good place. You know what I mean? So, but then on the flip side, yes, there are times where you need to be a trailblazer. You need to go out and make something. And that's kind of what she sings about in this song, is that, yeah, I could do the smoothest thing, but that's no fun. And it's not me, because Cocoam is an easy path. I mean, he's basically laid out, this marriage is laid out on a platter for her. All she has to do is say yes, and boom, you know, they're going to have this life together. But is that truly the life that she wants? Because he's the total polar opposite of her.
Right.
Like, he's a good guy, and he's an amazing leader for this community, but he's just not Pocahontas, not vibing too well.
And I totally understand. I just am just laughing at the fact that they're like, oh, take the smoothest course, kids. But I get it, because there's also the fact of like, okay, yeah, when you watch they splinter off section of a river, generally that splinter off thing gets smaller and smaller until it eventually just dies.
Like, not true.
A lot of them. I'm like,
sometimes, you know, they splinter off because it ends up being the better course and the other one dies.
Well, okay, we could go along talking about metaphorical riverbeds. What's funny is that this song actually almost didn't make it into the film. The people at Disney, the executives, doubted whether the song was like would have the right impact that they wanted. But Stephen Schwartz was just like, I believe very strongly in this, and I believe that this is the I want song. This is the song that really explains why Pocahontas is going to say no. So let's keep it. And eventually the Disney was like, okay, I guess so. So I like Just Around the River.
I love this song. I think this song is fun. It really truly introduces us to her. Even more as a character. I mean, we've seen that she's kind of this rebel Native American princess who jumps off cliffs and is slightly reckless. But this allows her to express it in song, which, hey, I'll always take.
There you go. Well, while we're talking about, you know, the whole thing, let's talk Cocoam. I really like Cocoam.
I feel like... too.
Like the line in the song where it's like a handsome, sturdy husband who builds handsome, sturdy walls. And I'm thinking, can't we have both walls and adventure? I would appreciate that. I do not mind having a handsome, sturdy husband who would build a handsome, sturdy wall. We can go outside too. How do you know that Cocoam, you know, he was the leader. He was the major warrior. So obviously I feel like he's got some adventure in him.
I don't know. Yeah, they try to make him like the stoic, boring character, but that's just really true and genuine and a good guy. But I don't know. I just really always kind of resonated with him and thought that he was just this great guy. And then the ultimate end that happens to him is just that much sadder, you know?
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that when we get there. But they really do try to juxtapose Kokoam with John Smith, who we've already met, but we'll see even more. And he's very much like Pocahontas, an adventurer. Yeah. He's, you know, singing songs. He's climbing cliffs right up her alley. Also very foreign, you know. Gotta love those foreign guys.
Gotta love the foreigners, man. No, what's funny, though, is, like, she's like, so where do you think your home is? And he's like, yeah, I don't really have a home. Da, 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 da. Well, your home could be here. And I'm just thinking, aren't you trying to, like... You're trying to turn him into Kokoam now.
You want him to build you some handsome, sturdy walls. You had one who was going to do that already.
That was a problem I had. I was like, hey, you should be, like, not saying that. But hey, I guess if you have her kind of hair, you can get a lot. You can get away with a lot.
Her hair or his hair or all of the characters' hair for the most part are very much hashtag hair goals, because Kokoam, Pocahontas, and John Smith. Hey, I'll take it.
I'll take it. Yeah. No, it's funny. I have some Native American friends and this family that they've worked with us for many years, and like every single one of their sons has more luscious, beautiful hair than I do. And it just like every single time I see him, I'm like, I am so jealous of your hair.
Right.
It's just like super long and beautiful. I'm like, ugh.
Thick and shiny.
Yeah. I'm like, man. So yeah, those are definitely hair goals. Glenn Keane was in charge of Pocahontas, and to give it to him, like, Jeffrey Katzenberg basically said, I want you to make the most idealized and finest woman ever made.
Whoa.
And he was like, okay. And so they ended up going on a research trip in Virginia, and they ended up meeting two of the granddaughters of Pocahontas. And he said that as he was looking at both of them in their faces, and as they stood there, I took a picture of both of them, he said, and between their faces was Pocahontas' face in my mind. I could see her. And I was like, that's cool. I like that. But, I mean, he basically went and took people from all over to try and make the, like, most beautiful, iconic woman ever. And that's why anybody who was going to be on his team had to be fantastic at figure drawing and like a whole nother level of artistic supervision in that character.
Yeah, Pocahontas is a very beautiful character. What I love about her is that her body type is different than some of the other characters. I mean, you have Ariel, which is another Glenn Keane design, and she's very petite. Yeah. And much smaller in figure. But Pocahontas, because she is this outdoor girl, is very athletically built, you know, broader shoulders and muscular. And I think it's just really cool, her design. And, you know, they obviously take liberties with her costume, the, you know, off the shoulder look, which of course is not historically accurate. But, you know, one thing, like we're talking about, this is like they were trying their best at the time and then took, you know, liberties. But I feel like if this movie were made now, just because so many people get an uproar over every little thing, that there would be that much more scrutiny on it. But with me, I'm like, you know what? We don't need to put our ideals and the way society is today on a film from, you know, 20 years ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago, because it was just a different time. Like, you can't and I've said this multiple times on the podcast, you can't expect them in the past to have progressed to the level where we are today, right? But all that aside, I dig her clothes. You know, clearly it's not representation. Clearly it's not realistic. Here's your mini skirt dress that you're going to be running around in, you know, in Tacoma. Here's the same thing with her. Here's your crop top and skirt that you're wearing. But you know what? It is what it is. You know what?
Yeah.
I liked him on the Barbies.
I liked him on Barbies. I had the Barbie.
Mm.
I did.
Do you remember the one Barbie that, like, that was like the twirly hair.
Yes, that's
Miko,
the one I had.
You had the braiding Barbie where Miko
I had the braiding Barbie.
Her hair.
Yeah, because you were supposed to be able to like put your own hair in Miko's hands too, and he would braid your hair. Because that one scene, like it was so iconic in everybody's mind of like, oh, I want a, you know, a raccoon to braid my hair. I don't know why that would be iconic. Like, if you're looking at the reality of that,
why not free servants?
It's like, he's not a servant. He's your friend, and he's like a girlfriend. Miko, just, hey, I'm here to braid your hair.
And
so but the thing is, like, this little toy that they had, first off, the hands itself would spin, like, in its own circle to be able to tighten each one of the, you know, chunks of hair that you put in it.
Uh-huh.
And then the whole body would spin around. So it would hold on to its, like, these now tightened pieces of hair, and now it would spin around itself to be able to do the, you know, long, you know, swirly braid that goes all the way
more
down.
More of a twist rather than a
braid. Yeah, more of a twist than a braid. But, you know, it's kind of difficult to do the three style. Like, you would need three hands.
And you'd have to let go at some point and grab back on. Yeah.
But, yeah, I totally had it, and my hair got tangled it many times. So I just stopped using it. I was like, no.
Yeah. This was
does not have the same aesthetic pleasure as the movie does. So
no, definitely whatever. Not. But they tried.
They did. Actually, it was that scene, like, because you mentioned that there was supposed to be a turkey as her main, like, person, or mm-hmm. her main sidekick. And it was actually going to be voiced by John Candy. But then they switched when they were like, oh, yeah, he's now going to be mute. And it's really hard for a turkey who has feathers to pantomime because he doesn't have thumbs or anything mm-hmm. like that. So it really puts a downer on the whole turkey idea. And so Joe Grant would later draw a sketch of the hair braiding raccoon, and then Glenn Keane animated it. And then all the directors were like, they love the idea. Let's get rid of the turkey and add the raccoon. And so it just became Miko was created because, you know, first off, they like raccoons, they have this like naturally enigmatic like look and feel. And because they have little hands and their little masks over their eyes, they're like little thieves, so they can be mischievous and all this type of stuff. In reality, you should not make friends with raccoons. I'm just going to put that out there because they can be vicious. And we had a couple get on our property, and it basically my dog got in a fight with it, and their hands, their claws are so sharp that they like, they almost took off his nose. Like, he had giant cuts throughout his nose for the rest of his life because of those dang raccoons.
Yikes. Okay, yeah, so note to self. Do not find myself a hair-braiding raccoon friend / girlfriend because it's not going to go well. I'm most likely going to have no nose and little hair left after he spins like crazy. That's the toy.
Did you have any of the other toys?
I mean, I had the four Pocahontas dolls, and I think I shared this story on the podcast where we moved to a new house, and so we did a garage sale right before, and so it'd been a few years since Pocahontas came out, and I played with these dolls all the time. I loved them, and I don't know why I was trying to just, like, get rid of stuff, you know, when you're ambitious, and you're like, get rid of it all, I don't need it, and I remember putting those for sale at the garage sale, and some guy, like, within the very first few minutes walked up and took them all and bought them all and went away, and in that moment I wanted to be like, no, just kidding, I love them, come back.
I want them back.
So I actually went back, and he only bought the Pocahontas and the Cocoum for some reason. Or maybe he bought the John Smith too, but a few years ago, like, I was still very nostalgic for these dolls. I wanted them. So I went on eBay and bought the Pocahontas and Cocoum back.
What?
Like, no joke. This happened within the past 7 years or something. So yeah, don't give up your sweet toys because you'll miss them. I also, we had like a lot of the, you know, McDonald's toys who didn't. But we also had these cups that were plastic, and they were of each one of the characters' faces. And it was, like, molded out. Like, Miko's face would pop out, and then there was a Pocahontas and John Smith. Those were weird cups. I was glad to see those go. But as far as any other toys... Well, at this point in time, I'd also started collecting some of the Disney ceramics that you could buy at the Disney store. So I had this beautiful Pocahontas, and I had Miko and Flit that I had on my collection. I had a shelf on my wall. And when we moved, my sister put up the shelf and with the Pocahontas on it, and I put all my things on it, and it wasn't set up properly, so it broke. And Pocahontas broke in half. And I was just totally devastated, and Miko was fine, and Flit, his nose cracked off, which his nose is, like, basically a long twig, and so they glued it back, but he still has, like, a piece of paint missing. And my mom felt so bad. She went to this, like, collectible shop in the mall and got me this, like, really beautiful Pocahontas sitting Grandmother Willow, like... It was not like the full Grandmother Willow, but it's just like a circle of a tree stump sitting with the compass in her hand. And it was a significant upgrade from what I had. Mine was probably about $20, and that one was probably a couple hundred. But I still have that. It doesn't really go with the vibe of my house. I'm not a big Disney merchandise display slash collector, I guess. So I have it, and I'm just kind of trying to figure out, like, how do you display this one thing, this one Pocahontas statue? But I definitely had those, and yeah. Folks, I was, like, all in for Pocahontas at this point in time. It was just, like, could not get enough of any of it.
See, and I like talking to you about this because, you know, there's so many people that aren't. And I'm one of the people that isn't, you know? So it's like, it's cool to see, like, what exactly was it about Pocahontas that you were so into?
I think, to be honest, it was more just general Disney excitement. Like, the movie wasn't that bad to me, and I actually really just enjoyed the movie. It was just, like, another concept, new characters, and, like, I went in wanting to love it and did love it. I can't really, like, pinpoint a specific thing. I think it was just, like... continued Disney hysteria building upon itself, which ultimately cracked at Atlantis. Atlantis was the real film that came out that was just so bad I couldn't even pretend to like it anymore. You know what I mean? I can appreciate it today, but it just wasn't, you know, even me could not justify Atlantis.
I cannot justify this. Well, the other thing that Disney is known for this one specifically was the soundtrack. You always had the better, you know, Disney playlist than I did. So out of this one, what are the songs that you would always slash never skip?
Whew, okay, well, I would listen to Virginia Company, but I would skip it occasionally. Just around the River Bend is an always listen. There's the Grandmother Willow songs. Listen with your heart, you will understand. Let it sweep above you like the blah, blah, blah. That's a skip, along with the reprise later. Mind, 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 I always listen to. I thought that was very catchy and always enjoyed that one and listened to that one. Colors of the Wind, classic, can't go wrong. And then Savages, for the most part, I would always listen to. I also really liked the Steady as the Beating Drum, which is like the main title, and it's her people singing. I think that's cool, but those are kind of skip, like Grandmother Willow song, that first initial song, the Steady as the Beating Drum, Virginia Company. So kind of skips, you know.
Yeah. I would listen to Just Around the River Bend, Mine, 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 and Savages.
Mm-hmm.
Colors of the Wind, it was like a give and take.
Had to be the right mood.
I liked it, but it wasn't like my fave, right?
Right. I can see that. Overall, I think a very good score.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cohesive. It's different. It's very unique to this film, but still feels very classic, you know, Disney at this time.
Mm-hmm. It sold really well. Obviously, it got triple platinum certification, which just is a different time. 1995 is the time when, you know, people actually got those certifications pretty easily.
Right.
Relatively, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, like The Greatest Showman just hit a single platinum, and that's like a huge deal.
Right. So, like, yeah. I mean, with everything on demand nowadays, there really is no point in purchasing music unless you really, really love it. You know, and right. I think so many people absolutely just love The Greatest Showman that they're going out and actively buying those soundtracks. While there's still going to be a subset of people who are just going to stream it on YouTube or whatever, you know, streaming device or platform they want. But with this, back in the time, if you wanted to listen to it, especially this thing, you can't go to the radio. They're not playing right. Savages on your local, you know, pop radio station. It's just not going to happen. You know, so you actually had to go out and buy. And I had the cassette tape, but I'm sure, you know, CD. And you had to go buy those and really indicate that this is something important to me that I want to purchase and listen to. And so, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Michael Jackson's Thriller is one of, still to this day, the greatest selling album of all time. Because, one, there weren't so many options, where now there's so many genres and subgenres and all these different artists and independent artists. Like, before, it was just the big people, you know?
Right.
And then there was really only one way to listen to your music, which was you had to buy it. And so I don't imagine there ever being anyone topping that again, because the market's so fragmented.
The barrier to entry is so low now comparatively that you are getting a lot more variety. You know, then it was like you couldn't get that much variety back then just because the barrier to entry was so high.
Yeah, it's whatever the music executive said was going to be good and a hit is what you got, and you had to choose from that.
Mm-hmm. I'm a much bigger fan of how it works nowadays, how it's definitely a lot more in the fans and in the like independent musician world's favor. But it's just interesting to see, like, yeah, this was a time when in order to get that type of success, that level of money, you really had to come in at a certain time in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But. So triple platinum, not too shabby. I feel like most recent, you know, success for that has been Moana and Frozen for Disney. I still feel that when Disney comes out with great scores and soundtracks for their films, people will still go actively to purchase those.
Yes.
So, you know, Disney is in a good place if they still continue to do movie musicals, which I don't see them changing anytime soon. But we'll see how Frozen 2 does.
We'll see.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the music. You know, now this is where these two worlds combine. I call them foreigners, but they're really, you know, the Englishmen. They come and they are beginning to settle on this new world. And then there's the people who've already been here. And they aren't really too aware of each other's existence at this point. But then slowly it starts happening, and Pocahontas is peeking through the bushes. John Smith is exploring. I really think one of the most iconic scenes is when Pocahontas comes out, you know, from the waterfall and stands up, and there's just all this mist around her, and it's, you know, windy, and her hair's blowing, and he just is in awe of what he is seeing in front of him, which, you know,
the world's most iconic woman.
But there, yes, exactly.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Right. You know, and so then we have these two, which are kind of the representations of these two different worlds, and we start seeing them interact because she's very curious and wants to explore and learn about this new man and culture, and he's very open to it. But there's that whole issue about understanding each other, and we don't want to waste too much time figuring that all that out. That's just messy and confusing. Doesn't make for a good movie. So, you know, just the magic of the wind.
The magic of the wind makes us so that we understand each other.
Snap your fingers. And woo, it's like, woo.
At the very point when they meet, and he's just like, you don't understand the thing that I'm saying, do you? And I'm thinking, what the? You expect her to understand English? You're from Europe, dude.
Right.
You know not everyone speaks English. You're not like the modern American who just thinks everybody should. Well, why don't you? Everybody else does. Right. Like, what the heck? So, ignoramus. Yeah, she's just like, you know, starting speaking her native tongue, and then all of a sudden, the wind blows, and, oh, great, now I can understand you.
Woohoo, all now. Right. So, back to business. How are you?
How are you? What's your name?
Yeah, that's always been something that's been very much criticized of this movie, but, I mean, I say, well, how else could you do it? Obviously, there's ways that you can do it. They can communicate. And that's what happened, you know, in real life. But, you know, it doesn't make for great dialogue. You know, when you have one speaking.
Oh, add an extra scene that we just don't really need.
So, you know, magic of the leaves. Perfect.
Then jumps into the point where he just talks, oh, yeah, I'd love to see all of that. Oh, you will. We're going to build it right here. It's going to be great. She's like, our houses are fine. You only think that because you don't even know any better. And I'm thinking, he's right. Indoor plumbing, it's going to be big.
Right. But, we definitely see the different attitudes towards the settlers where they just kind of assume that because of who they are and for one reason or another, their way is the best way. And we're just going to take over and plow.
It's the modern American, like, ideals, basically.
Right.
Which seems awkward because...
They're not American.
She's the only real American there.
It was a different time.
The British. I blame the British.
You know, we haven't really talked about Governor Ratcliffe very much.
Oh, that's true.
We have not. I love him. I think he's just this great character because his motives are very clear. It's from the very beginning, we understand, you know, this probably isn't the best guy. He's the leader. He's almost the aristocrat who's in charge, but not really because he's not royalty, but he's definitely trying to get there. He's the governor. So, you know, he has some sort of political power and authority, but I just love his design that he's wearing purple, that he's just so pompous. And huge, this pickle giant tummy.
Huge.
And then we have him, you know, juxtaposed with Wiggins, who is about as skinny and shrimpy as they come. We never change. Yeah, and we go into a song, and I just love that song. We kind of talked a little bit about it.
Mine.
Yeah, but...
It's fun.
It's fun. It's over the top. Because it's in song form, they can get away with a lot of the things that they're doing. Just... The explosions and the giant piles and people dig. You know, it's very kind of Broadway. Yeah. But then, you know, we see even more of his motives where he's my arrival back home, you know, and he's dreaming of they'll see how I glitter and basically how he'll knight me. No, lord me. He just has these delusions of grandeur where he wants the gold because it gives power. And he just wants it so badly. So we're definitely seeing where he's coming from. You know, this was during the 90s, so it was definitely the environmentalists. You know, this was Captain Planet era, right, where it was all about saving the environment. And so, you know, we could see that mindset of him destroying the environment, you know, coming to this new place and just tearing it up and destroying it, how that definitely is not going to be looked well upon by the audience or... by the people who are here who treat the earth with such respect and care.
Right.
So.
Well, and then it's like, you know why they attacked us, right? Because we laid waste to all their land and everything that they have? No. They want to steal our gold.
Yes.
Of course. Well, that kind of like leads us also into, you know, the song Color of the Wind. And this song, like I said, it's one of those songs that I like... On a good day, I like it, and on another day, I'll skip it, you know, it's mm-hmm. like back and forth. But I will, even though I said that, I will say that I am hippie enough to believe the sentiments in the song. Like, I do believe that everything does have, like, a spirit and has an essence, you know? So, like, I get everything that they're trying to get out of this song. So it's not like I'm one of those people that's like bleh, they're just trying to turn me into a natural person. I don't know.
No, it's perfect because, you know, it helps to show Pocahontas and her people's point of view and how they treat things versus what we just saw with Ratcliffe. And he couldn't care less about the dirt and the trees and the animals. And it's really just a very beautiful scene. You know, I even love that very first... There's that one scene where in the song, you know, there's the bear and immediately John Smith is, like, going to shoot it. Like,
right.
Whoa, there's really no need to do that. and Pocahontas like puts her hand and kind of leads him a different way. So she's teaching him this new way of life, not necessarily to force him to believe it, but to say, hey, there's this other way, and this is what we're about. And right. your way isn't necessarily, you know, your way or the highway. How about you take a look through our shoes and see things the way we see them? And it's really this beautiful scene. I love the colors, how they switch during this scene where it's very vibrant and there's lots of purples and pinks and oranges. And overall, it's just a really beautifully done scene.
Yeah. Michael Giacchino was the animation director for the film. And we actually got to meet him. He was the art director for Frozen as well. Mm. And so I was really, I wish I would have like put two and two together when I like knew him, when right. I like was meeting him. Because like we were new. Don't judge us. It was like in the very beginning of our podcasting years, our very beginning of like actually digging in and knowing who people were. And I hadn't put those two together, but then later on, as I'm reading so many art books and reading all these different things, I'm like, oh my gosh, Michael Giacchino is so great.
You're right.
But we got to meet him, and, you know, I was reading it that he took a lot of his inspiration for this film from the works like Ivan Earle, who worked on Sleeping Beauty, and also Mary Blair. He's a big Mary Blair fan, obviously. Everybody is. Mm-hmm. But I just really appreciated everything that he brought to, especially this sequence. I think more than others, he had more of a hand in, maybe. But all throughout the film, just it was a beautiful film.
Right. I believe I don't know if he was the art director for Pocahontas, but or just in the art department. But I remember when we were talking to him, he talked about how he was so excited to be on Pocahontas because that was really seen as like the big project and right. the big hit, you know? And then I kind of feel that his sentiments were actually that it didn't end up, you know, because the movie wasn't received as well. It wasn't, it was still an amazing experience, but Frozen, you know, just was worlds
Oh,
more
extremely different.
What he was really looking for, and he was able to contribute a lot to that, but very cool.
Yeah. So there was this time long ago. Now, Morgan has always been a fan of this movie, and there was this time where we went to girls' camp, and they had this thing where they were going to be doing, like, the colors of the wind and, like, this whole, like, play, mm-hmm. and Morgan got chosen to be the chief. Mm-hmm. During this play, and I just remember her doing such a great job of being stoic and very Coco esque,
yes.
as she is the chief Morgan,
master of ceremonies, almost
master of you were. That's really what it was.
I think I have that on. I think I have that recorded on
oh, really?
Like a DVD somewhere. I should upload it to YouTube for the patrons.
You should.
Yeah. It was a lot of work. There were a lot of lines to memorize, and then we all sang Colors of the Wind and had to memorize it in sign language.
Yeah.
So, and then I was always front and
center.
It was
good times.
Yeah. Very good times. And I reveled in being chosen.
I know you did. That's why I'm bringing it up right now, so you can revel in it once again.
Ah, yes. Good times.
So going back, we've just done Colors of the Wind, and we did mention, you know, that is a very impressive wind that came around. Basically, they kind of tried to, like, every time the wind blows, it is her mother. And the thing is, like, Michael Eisner was really pushing to give Pocahontas a mother because he was always saying, we're always getting fried for having no mothers. So the writers wanted to, like, have some type of, like, you know, mother sentiment. But then the writers countered. I saw this on Wikipedia, so, you know, this is just what I'm reading off of Wikipedia. But it said that the writers countered that Powhatan was a polygamist, formed dynastic alliances among their other neighboring tribes by impregnating a local woman and giving away the child. So it was believed that Pocahontas herself probably didn't have, like, that much of her mother in her life. And then Eisner was like, well, that means we get toasted either way.
What? So this makes no sense. Okay, so he's polygamous, and so he, you know, has multiple people in his life. But this doesn't make sense, like, oh, because he was that way, she doesn't get to see her mother that much because since he's the dad, he's decided to take on all these children himself. Usually it'd be the opposite way. And if you have this dad who's, you know, fathering multiple children from multiple women, usually you don't see the dad as much, right?
Right.
Unless they're all living in one household, which this does not indicate that was the case because they're local.
If anything, he would take the son, right?
Right. And so it makes no sense that she's being raised by him. And so, like, too bad you're not going to ever see your mother. It's like more than likely 99% of the time she's being raised by the mom and probably never sees the dad. This is, wow. Pocahontas writers, we got to talk about that because I'm glad that never came up. I mean, it doesn't come up because she's dead, but, right. But, yeah.
Yeah. So there's also, so we were talking about Grandmother Willow, and she, you know, Katzenberg didn't want her in the film. And Joe Grant was like, I really feel like we should have her in here. And so let's come up with a whole bunch of tree puns, like my bark is worse than my bite.
Oh, no.
The root yes. of all problems.
And right.
They're barking up the wrong tree. And we're going to add that to the pitch for the next morning during the Asori meeting so that we can actually keep her. And they come out saying, everybody loved it. They're all saying, oh, we want her in. Let's build her part bigger. All because of puns. The puns. The pun master. So obviously they just came off of Aladdin. So you've got Jafar, who's the pun master of all. So, like, you know, people who are no longer working on Aladdin are still on that pun master vibe. So, like, Grandmother Willow's the next pun master. Oh, good times.
You know, Grandmother Willow, she's an interesting character. You know, like, again, they're trying to make this a much more serious film. Then we have Grandmother Willow, who's, you know, I guess it goes with these characters are more in tune with spirits and nature, you know. So as a result, maybe they're able to have this connection with this willow tree called Grandmother Willow, who's, you know, able to impart wisdom and whatnot. So, you know, there's that, but she's not bad. She's not great. She kind of just exists for me.
Yeah. They wanted to, like, for me, it was like they wanted to have a maternal figure. And so let's just add this willow in there.
Talking tree.
Yeah. Add talking tree.
Perfect. I mean, hey, that always solves all your problems. All right.
I really like Cocoam. Again. Mm-hmm. So we're going back. We're back to Cocoam.
Back to the hunk.
And he is the hunk. I think he's definitely hunkier than John Smith.
I agree.
Which
is kind of why I was always disappointed why she didn't go for him. Why she just, yeah.
Well, and also Nakoma, like, why didn't she go for him?
Oh, she's too low on the totem pole.
Yeah, that's true. He wouldn't go for her.
He needs the chief's daughter, not the chief's daughter's friend.
That's true. That's how it always is. But anyway, like, I was just so sad for Cocoham every time I saw him because he's just like, he cares about Pocahontas so much.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, I just want to make sure that she's okay and make sure she doesn't go off because she listens to you.
Like, yeah.
Like, aw, you care.
I know. It is cute because you do see him being very genuine in those moments. And, you know, and her friends are kind of hiding the truth from him. And he just really wants to be there for her. And he really does care for her. And then we see Thomas and his subplot where he's learning to be a man.
Right.
You know, you're not really a man until you learn how to shoot a gun, basically, was the thinking at the time. And so he's really working on that because he's really letting people down. And so we see Thomas's arc and he's we feel for Thomas. And so, you know, then he learns how to shoot a gun, both eyes open. And then these two moments come together with Cocoham and Thomas, where Thomas is trying to be a man. And Cocoham, in theory, actually is being a man by trying to protect and save Pocahontas.
Right. Well, and in his eyes, like, his girl, quote-unquote, is kissing a quote-unquote demon.
Like, right.
That's his vision, so he's going to save his girl.
Right. Yeah. And so. Gets shot and killed. And that's really, it's not a Mufasa death moment, but it really is a sad moment to see him die and be taken away. And then this really brings Pocahontas back to reality. I think this whole time up until this point, she she's been doing her own thing. She's kind of spoiled in the fact she's just allowed to run around and do what she wants. And she doesn't really want to take on the responsibility of marrying Kokuom because he's not what she wants. And then she's just gallivanting in the woods, literally, with John Smith. And then when reality hits, where someone close to her, you know, especially in her village, where she, I imagine she's known Kokuom for a long time, you know, dies at the hands of these people, I think it wakes her up.
Yeah.
And then she kind of, in that moment, like, I get the feeling that Pocahontas realizes what she lost. And she, you could tell she cares for Kokuom. She really did. She just didn't kind of realize it at the time. You know, maybe she wasn't ready at that moment in time for Kokuom or what. We'll never know. Maybe it never would have happened. But the fact that Kokuom is gone now really makes it hit home. And
I don't think she was necessarily into Kokuom. I think that she more, just like you said, woke up to the reality of this fight.
Right.
And how serious every decision that she is currently making is.
Yeah, there's no indication that she's ever going to actually choose Kokuom, but she wakes up, and then it truly does start siding with her people. You know, you killed him! You know, and then she goes with them as they go to bury him, and we see her more with the people at this moment in time because of what's happened.
Right.
So, you know, which leads to the big savages moment.
Well, before that, it leads to the moment where, like, I have to go inside and look into the eyes of the man who killed Kokuom. And the guards are like, meh, okay, make it quick.
Right. But but he didn't kill Kokuom.
Right, I know, but, like, that's how she gets in.
I know.
In that moment is where they have this song that they cut, which is the If I Never Knew You song.
Which is a pretty good song.
Yeah, in and of itself, I think it's a pretty good song. But I am glad that they cut it. The love song was cut because they were in this test screening, and then, like, younger audiences weren't really interested. And I'm quoting, as it said, the teenagers felt giddy as it played. Oh, like, what?
Huh?
Okay. Macon suggested that the song be removed from the film. And I was just like, they felt giddy? What? Maybe it was just, like, kind of forced.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
At this moment, when, you know, and there are versions of the film which you can watch and see this song and new scene. I mean, they reanimated or, like, finished the animation for it. You can see it inserted. And it doesn't necessarily work because there's all this tension and almost racial tension between the natives and the British, right? And then, oh, but I got to go talk to him because I still love him, which I get. There definitely has been this love and relationship that's been formed, but it breaks it significantly because then we have to just go straight into savages, which brings it back, you know? Yeah. So tonally, it doesn't help because you're up and down, up and down, up and down with, you know, how they're trying to make us feel. And so with it removed, we're able just to focus on, okay, this is the moment where the two sides are now at war, and off we go. We'd sing Savages, Savages, which is a very strong song. And it displays the sentiments of both sides, how they both feel they're right, and how they're describing the other ones. Definitely may not be considered PC, but that's the point.
Right.
They just see the whole song is called Savages. They see each other as, like, demons and savages and not like them.
Right.
Which ultimately we learn the moral of the story and it all resolves itself. And we shouldn't look at people that way, but in the moment it's very tense, and the coloring and the lighting and just the way this song plays out is very well done.
Yeah. I actually really like that song, that whole section, just because it's, like, it's so powerful and it's so, like, whoa, cool.
Yeah.
Like, you finally went somewhere. It's kind of how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but it doesn't actually go anywhere. It just...
Yeah, it doesn't.
It stopped by Pocahontas saying, just, stop!
The song itself, it goes somewhere. But,
you know, but she and then throws herself down.
Like, where did those drummers come from? Like, out of nowhere, you have this little line of, like, drummers, like, drummer boys, and I'm like, had they just been, like, hanging out, waiting for their, you know, moment? Oh, it's time for the song. Jump in line, guys.
Of course.
Of course, of course.
You gotta have your drummers at the ready. You never know when you're gonna break out into song.
That's true.
So, you know, it never actually comes to war because Pocahontas throws herself on John Smith right before he's going to be clubbed to death by Powhatan. That's a very interesting thing to think if this had she not stepped in just in the nick of time. Like, I look at that club that he has and I'm like, that does not look pretty.
No, that's going to be really ugly.
Yeah. So thankfully she steps in and, you know, hopefully saves the day, but then Ratcliffe shoots and ends up wounding John Smith and making him the true bad guy at the end of the day because he shot one of his own people. And it kind of resolves, and some of the British stay, some leave, and they're going to figure out how to make this work, you know?
Yeah.
But ultimately, John Smith goes because he's wounded and needs to head back. And that's hard for Pocahontas because she does still love him. But she kind of accepts that we're from two different worlds. I always felt that this was kind of bittersweet ending because it's not like this big romance love resolution that you're kind of expecting with most films or stories. It's
yeah. I was not really a fan of the fact that like nobody got a happy ending. Like it was. And just the fact that you do that, everyone is like, all the critics are like, oh, I'm so glad that they like did something different and whatnot. But I'm like, I like happy endings, okay?
Yes, but I do think that it kind of is really, you know, depicting the real world. I think sometimes people have these adventures in love where it's so fun and exciting, but it's not the steady course, going back to that at the very beginning. You know, it's not the smoothest course. It's just really not meant to be, and it's not going to work out.
Right.
But sometimes you need to go on that adventure and journey to learn that. And we don't know what happens with Pocahontas. I mean, I guess we do with the sequel. But
well, I mean, she marries John Wolfe and
I know, but
and dies of scarlet fever. Sucks to be her.
But you know, at this point in time,
really should have stayed home.
At this point in time, it's just we're going our separate ways. Wingapo. That's something that I say all the time. Wingapo. And how we say goodbye. Ah, nah. I think I like hello better.
So,
that's his flirting tactics, yes. But I say Wingapo, or I used to, quite a bit.
Wingapo, father.
But she's doing the old ah, nah, you know, as he's leaving. And of course, the wind, doo-doo-doo-doo, magical leaves, sending the message to him, and he gets the message, and off you go. So, that is Pocahontas.
That is Pocahontas. Well, as we've talked about, like, the historical accuracy of this film was probably one of the biggest thing that people, like, knock on it. And so we'll just go through a couple of things. Like, for instance, Pocahontas' real name was Matauka, and Pocahontas was, like, a nickname, which can be variously translated to playful one, little brat, or the naughty one. So there you go. And in the film, Pocahontas is a young adult. She's like around 10 or 11 is when how she is in reality. And then Smith is portrayed as an amiable man, when in reality, he is described by having a harsh exterior by his fellow colonists. Which I'm thinking, okay, how did this, you know, 10, 11-year-old girl win the heart of this, like, harsh exterior guy? I kind of would like to see that movie, too.
I don't think Pocahontas and her were ever linked. It was always her and John Rolfe, but John Smith was kind of the bigger character in history that was more well-known.
Yeah, I guess. Because she did... Once again, Wikipedia says that whether or not Pocahontas saved John Smith's life is debated. An English colonist led by Samuel Argall captured Pocahontas 3 years after John Smith departed from England. And then she was converted to Christianity and later married John Rolfe, who was known for introducing tobacco as a cash crop. So, you know, she was rich at that point. But once again, she goes off to England, which she shouldn't have done, and gets sick. So anyway, like the thing is that the filmmakers, because they didn't follow like actually what happened, you know, specifically the people in the settle, like the these settlement people that they talked to. Like they went on their research trip to Jamestown Settlement, and they even paid a consultant who was one of the granddaughters, like descendants of Pocahontas, Shirley Little Dove Castle McGrawan. And they paid her $500 a day plus expenses to help. But then when she realized that, you know, history was not being a priority to them, that she just got so sad, and she's like feels a such shame that her name is even connected to it, because they didn't follow anything that she wanted, that she was putting out there.
Right.
And so it's like, so because of things like that, it gets a lot of flack. And I mean, like you mentioned with Moana, like, I don't think we would have had such a great experience with Moana culturally had they not had such a horrible experience with Pocahontas culturally. So they really wanted to make something like come back and like, I know that we've been known for being a jerk with other people's cultures, but this time we're going to do it okay?
Yeah, thankfully.
And they did, you know?
Yeah. They did not repeat history here.
Yeah. But all in all, like, critical response, this is going to be, out of all of the films in the Renaissance, this is the lowest rated. You look at on Rotten Tomatoes, and everything else is like 92%, and then Pocahontas is 56%. Like,
interesting.
Gunk. Like, oh.
Yeah.
And it took a while for like people to get it back up to like even the 80s, where they're
Yeah, Pocahontas and Hunchback are by far the lowest.
Uh-huh.
If you count,
even beat out
Rescuers
Down Under, which is like the forgotten Renaissance film.
Right.
Anyway.
Good times. Okay.
Good times. All right. I'll rate it first. For me,
sure.
I give it 3 out of 5 stars. I didn't like it much as a kid. And though I have a deeper appreciation for its artistry and technical advances and like the whole technical side as an adult, I'm still not the biggest fan. Like, some songs are fine and good, but I don't like gravitate to the score or anything. The CD, I don't gravitate to it. It's not one that I'm like, oh, I want to go listen to Pocahontas right now. It doesn't have good replay value for me overall. The last time I watched this movie, it was just because it was like part of the very first group of Disney films that got put on Netflix. And I was over at a friend's house, and so they were just started playing it because, you know, why not? And so it was like playing in the background of a quote unquote hang, you know? And I just remember watching it with about 70% attention span. And that was fine. I was like, yeah, that's about where I fall with this movie. So
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 stars. I personally really enjoy this film. I think it's good. It's not perfect, and it definitely, there are other Renaissance films that are so much better and more enjoyable, but it does have a special place in my heart. I was just very much obsessed with Disney at this time, and Pocahontas, I still had those Disney goggles on throughout this time and never took them off, you know, so... You know, but looking at it now, critically, it's not a perfect film, but I still enjoy myself as I'm watching it. There are some moments in the middle that get a bit slow. Mostly, you know, the scenes with the critters in the forest and whatnot. But for the most part, I'm really interested in all the characters, and I think they have good motivations, and it, for the most part, we're able to tell a pretty fun story. The songs, I think, are really good. Some of my favorite, and I love the score. And, yeah, so I'm just going to give it 4 out of 5 stars.
Awesome. All right, so we're going to head on into our voicemail section. Our first voicemail is from Alex.
Greetings from Germany. This is Alex calling in to give my review of Pocahontas. In my opinion, this is one of the weakest films of the Disney Renaissance, but I still think that it is significantly better than most people give it credit for. I don't take issues with the historical inaccuracy or the decision to turn the relationship between John Smith and Pocahontas into a love story. What I do take issue with is the first half of the movie, which in my opinion is quite dull and slow moving. However, things pick up in the second half, and I enjoy that quite a bit more. Probably my favorite aspect about this film is Governor Radcliffe. No, I don't think he is one of the best Disney villains, but he is funny when he needs to be, he's menacing when he needs to be, and I think that David Ogden Stiers gave a great performance. In addition, I love the songs in this film. Again, I don't think that they reach the heights of the songs in the other Disney Renaissance movies, but they're still very enjoyable. Overall, I give this film 4 stars out of 5. Bye!
Our next one is from Rose. This is her very first voicemail with us.
Hi, my name is Rose. I'm leaving my voicemail for this week's episode, Pocahontas. Firstly, again, I've sung my praises previously, but thank you very much again for the podcast. Really, really great listening. Really fascinating to hear your opinions about everything animation, even going really into depth with sort of character designs and the way it's achieved. So for this week's episode, I obviously, being a Disney nerd, I love Pocahontas, particularly the music, the story. The story is not as good as the music, I'd say. Like, the music just is incredible, especially the instrumental Farewell, which is like 7-8 minutes long, and it's just so, it just builds up, and it sort of starts really like mellow, and then just gets louder and louder and gets more intense, and then you have like the image of Pocahontas waving to John Smith, and it's all like building up, and it's just absolutely incredible piece of music. So Anna Menken, of course, is to thank for that. So that's what really stays in my head when I think of Pocahontas. But yeah, so thanks again for your podcast, and take care. Bye.
So our next one is from Bethany. She is a Roto Nation member.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Bethany calling in for a Pocahontas review. Oh, where do I start with this movie? So I was 9 years old when this came out and had seen Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, and so was full in the Disney Renaissance. And this was the first movie, Disney movie at least, that I remember going to the theater and walking out disappointed. So ever since then, I've had a real gripe against this movie and just pretty much hated it. So I saw that it was on Netflix a couple months ago and decided I'm going to watch this. Maybe as an adult, I'll feel differently and I'll have an appreciation for it. And I watched it again, and pretty much nothing changed. So my opinion of this movie is that it feels like it's trying too hard all the time. I know this was a prestigious movie compared to The Lion King, at least when they were making it, and it feels like that's what they're trying to do. It feels like they were so excited about Beauty and the Beast being nominated for a Best Picture that they're like, we're going to make it happen again with Pocahontas, except it didn't get any of the charm. It didn't get any of just the fun that Beauty and the Beast had. I don't love the music. I find Just Around the River Bend the most annoying Disney song in the entire canon. I do enjoy Mine, 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 Colors of the Wind, whatever. It's fine. It's tolerable. Watching it as an adult and they sing the Savages, Savages song was kind of like, whoa, this is something. So I feel like one of the major issues they have, other than just feeling like it's trying really hard, is just this question of tone. It's like they were trying to make it serious, which I don't have a problem with, but it's like they couldn't commit completely. So we have to have, of course, Pocahontas has to have animal friends where hijinks ensue. And as a result, I felt like it just broke up the story. And it had you switching back and forth between really serious themes and then switching back between these, like, silly animals doing things. And I just thought it was distracting and it wasn't moving the story ahead. I just really don't like this movie. And I still don't really like this movie. So, I mean, out of 5, I'll give it a 1.5. I know some people are going to really disagree with me. The animation is beautiful, and my recommendation is just watch the movie on mute, and you'll be a whole lot happier. 5.
Wow. So Bethany definitely is more on Team Chelsea for this one. Is not a fan. 1.5 out of 5 stars. I can't believe it. Wow. Watch the whole movie on mute and you'll be a whole lot happier. That is definitely a tagline for sure. And I disagree with, I really like the music, but I can definitely understand that point of view.
I mean, she was a lot harsher on it than I was.
Right.
I'm like, I gave it 3. Thanks, Bethany. All right, now also another Roto Nation member, Sol.
Hello, Rotoscopers. This is Sol. Okay, Pocahontas. I just want to say this is such an underrated Renaissance film. You know, everyone's like, The Lion King is gonna not be so big. Pocahontas is gonna be a huge success. And then things didn't turn out that way. But I must say, still, Pocahontas is such a wonderful film. I understand people's upset with because of the inaccuracy. But if you change the title of the movie and change the name of the characters, honestly, it's a great story. You know, first of all, for me, it's just the animation. Like, the animation moved me in so many ways. There were so many moments and frames that just left me speechless. It was wonderful. The way, you know, the character design and just the everything from the landscapes were, it reminded me a bit of Sleeping Beauty. It was different, and I really enjoyed that. I want to talk about the music. The music's absolutely wonderful in this film. It's just so moving. It makes you think. It talks about so many relevant topics. I mean, this movie was made many years ago, and you watch it, and you literally, you know, they talk about things that are people are still talking about today. They're really relevant, and they make you think. And I think the songs are absolutely, they just have something so deep in it and so poetic and wonderful. And I think it's really, really great. Unfortunately, I must say the sequel was so unfortunate. You know, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's just, I feel like everyone has seen it. And if you haven't seen the sequel, don't. You know, it's just such a horrible, you know, they build all this romance in the first one and destroy it. I think what's interesting about Pocahontas, like in the Renaissance, everyone had a happy ending. And this movie was the first one to kind of not have a fully happy ending. I watched it recently and that last moment made me cry. It was just so beautiful but sad at the same time. So those are my thoughts. I know this is a very controversial film. I'm very excited to know what will you guys think about it. I just think it's beautiful in the animation. The story is great. You know, I know it has flaws. It's not a perfect film, but it has a lot to offer. And it's, I think, underrated. There was a song cut in Pocahontas called If I Ever Knew You. I was wondering, what do you guys think about it? I know it's on YouTube and I've listened to it and I, you know, it's fully animated, just that they screen it and kids were like, I don't like this. I don't like the singing for John Smith, to be honest. Not a huge fan of it, but I think it wasn't a terrible song. It was very sweet and nice. I just wish Pocahontas could sing more. But yeah, I think it was a good decision to cut it out. But I don't know. I still would have liked a song between them too. A romantic song, but maybe just different. But I really like the moment and the animation. It's really beautiful. And yeah, just curious to know your thoughts. Thank you so much for listening.
So we did talk about the If I Never Knew You part, and just how we both thought it was good, but probably best to keep out.
One thing we didn't even talk about were like who was playing different people in this movie. And, you know, it was talking about John Smith. I mean, he was Mel Gibson. That was a big get.
Mel Gibson, like he did it in the Virginia Company song.
Uh-huh.
I felt like he did a good job with that one because it's not really like an acting song.
Uh-huh.
Like it's just, hey, we're right. In the Virginia Company. But with this type of a song, If I Never Knew You, that is so acting. And it's so hard for somebody who hasn't done Broadway to really pull something like that off. And so I can also understand like why it didn't really come across as good, because like it's hard to sing with the correct emotions and still make it sound effortless and still make it sound like an actual conversation. And
right.
Like, it's hard. And so for somebody who is a movie star who can quote unquote sing, you get me started on these types of movies. Like, you go into a whole Les Mis category and I'm like, ugh, there's so many things that I have wrong with this movie. But
you don't like Les Mis?
I love Les Mis. I watched it not too long ago, but there are certain characters that I felt were extremely miscast because they were going for namesake versus.
Okay. I thought you were just talking about the movie in general.
Oh,
like,
no,
Chelsea,
no.
I think I'm about to break up with you right now because
we're breaking up. No, it's just because I felt like there's specific characters that they went specifically for name value recognition over actual competency for singing. So, and that bothered me. So,
and our Les Mis discussion is for another day.
Exactly, but it's related here.
In a land I can claim, a land I can tame, the greatest adventure is mine.
Keep on working, that's mine.
Don't be shirking, that's mine. Boys, mine, mine, mine.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. Of course, you can find all the show notes, links, and more at rotoscopers.com/168. Be sure to leave a comment with what your review would be. Are you more on Bethany's side, where you're 1.5 out of 5? Or are you more Morgan, which is 4 out of 5? Or are you kind of in the middle with Chelsea? Let us know, and we will be in the comments checking that out. Our next episode is going to be Toy Story 3, so get ready for that one. That is a patron pick. We're excited to do that. Ooh. So send in your voicemails, rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or give us a call at 406-646-6575. Of course, you can support the show on Patreon. We also have an Amazon link, so if you need to do any of your spring shopping, maybe you've done your spring cleaning and now you have empty halls because you, like me, decided to get rid of all of your Pocahontas dolls and other things, and now you feel so sad that you need something to replace it. So go to rotoscopers.com/Amazon to start all of your Amazon shopping there. Of course, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. We appreciate it that you leave us a review. It's one of the best ways that you can support the show. We're also available on Stitcher Radio and Spotify and basically anywhere good podcasts are found. You can find us on social media. We're at Rotoscopers. I'm at Morgan Stradling, and Chelsea is at Chelsea Robson on Instagram, Twitter, and all the good, cool places. And until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Trying to think of something clever to say.
It's not our forte.